and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Former Governor Jesse Ventura on the
That's
big
right.
show today. Comedian Dean Obadala. And just general frivolity.
Yes, Dean got in trouble with Newsbusters.
Oh, welcome to the club. Welcome to the club. See if we can make some more mischief. You know who normally gets us in trouble with Newsbusters? Oh, that scamp.
Carl.
Carl Frisch. Exciting. WholeFightStrategies.com. So inviting to me. Good morning, Carl Frisch.
Good morning. You know, it doesn't take much to get you in trouble with Newsbusters.
That is true.
No, it does not.
Just say a few factual things and they'll be all over it.
Yeah. And they'll be screeching like, I don't know, banshees.
Yeah. Liberal talking lady says world isn't flat. Rump.
Yeah. Oh, I got a hate letter yesterday that I talk entirely too much on my talk show.
Oh, well, you know, you shouldn't, you know, the second they let women on the radio, I mean, that's when things really went bad.
I know, right?
All right. So, Carl Frisch, your tweets this week, of course, with New Jersey this week, 1 in 3 Americans now live in a state with marriage equality.
Fantastic news.
How about that there?
Thanks in part to Chris Christie, who is walking some weird kind of tightrope where he wants to be seen as anti-marriage equality while helping to bring marriage equality to New Jersey by not fighting anymore.
Yeah, and he, what was in the debate? He said if his kid told him he was gay, he would hug him. And I'm not sure if the kid survived that. Then he said...
Well, right. I mean... I've never seen such a big guy tap dance before around the subject.
Yeah.
And the idea that a hug would be, preferable to, full equality and simple human dignity is perplexing to me. But, if that's where the Republicans are going to be right now, it's better than where they used to be, stoning the gay people.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Although you said, dear Governor Christie, any man who would deny his gay child a marriage doesn't love his child or his wife very much.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Anybody who would deny the world another gay wedding does not love the mother of the bride or the groom or the married couple.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not sure that the kid he'd be able to hear the kid if he were hugging him, right? I'm sorry.
No,
what?
I mean, it might not be a very nice thing to do at all.
Your other tweet, never thought of Ted Cruz as a reality TV star, but it makes sense. He loves drama and isn't here to make friends. Which he's doing a good job at.
Well, it just reminded me, he said, I didn't come here to make 99 new best friends. And in my head, all I could picture was every reality show villain of all time saying, I didn't come here to make friends. Tyra, I came here to be a top model. I did not come here to be best friends.
He's what was the gal on that everybody hated?
Omarosa.
He's the Omarosa of the Senate. You're absolutely right.
He absolutely is. Only his thing is not an act. It's absolutely sick. And as somebody who is happily enrolled in Obamacare and looking forward to benefits this January, I consider anybody who is standing in the way of Obamacare to be standing in the way of my ability to seek health treatment.
Yeah, well, exactly. I'm looking at the Chiron on TV, Obamacare website debacle. I mean, why do they have to go with Republican talking points? It's like...
Well, here's the problem, and I think folks should read more Clay Johnson on the subject at
right.
the Department of Better Technology. I think, yes, there is a huge problem with the website, and
right.
we're not talking about why there's a problem with the website. It has nothing to do with Obamacare. It has nothing to do with this White House. It has to, it's lazy to say Obama had such great websites when he was a candidate, but he does it in the government. What gives? He doesn't care. No, that's lazy thinking. What happened here was, and if you look at, there's a study out this past week that 96% of all government IT projects that are more than $10 million fail. And the reason that they fail is because only giant corporations can afford the lawyers to get government, work. It's called procurement,
right.
And agile, smart, sophisticated technology shops that can pull off projects like this without, you know, with ease, don't have the ability to bid on these contracts. So you end up with problems like this. Just last year, there was this website called SAM.gov that we spent over $100 million on, and it failed. This is not a problem exclusive to the Obama White House. This is a problem exclusive to the way that we pick contractors to pull off technological contracts.
You're right.
And he was, the president was saying, you know, that bringing this tech surge, you know, bringing in a lot of, and he said a lot of the top
and
people in the country.
Move.
Right.
That's
he,
a good first
but he
move,
said
but
they're acquainted with these kind of problems because this happens. I mean,
it does happen. And you know what? He shouldn't, you know, if Congress was really interested, first of all, let's be clear. They'll do anything to slow down Obamacare. Do not expect them to make it easy for the administration to fix this website. If they were interested in fixing the problem, they would not just look at the healthcare.gov. They would look at the way that we choose people to do these projects. But unfortunately, the people we choose to do these projects are giant corporations that bankroll Republican campaigns. So don't expect Republican politicians in Congress to do anything to save money, to be fiscally responsible,
right,
or to do the right thing.
You know, Steve Beshear, the governor of Kentucky, where obviously things are working real well, interesting, he was on CNN. He said, you know, the states that chose to implement their own exchanges, as was intended by the Affordable Care Act, the glitches have been few and far between. He said, we're signing up people at roughly 1,000 a day. It's a great rate and a great success so far. Describing the market as a gold standard because it's working. And he made a good point. He said, the federal system will be working fully in a month or two. History shows us after the implication of Medicare, it took 2 years to get it all working properly.
And
this
by
will
the way,
all work.
You know, Joe Barton, the right-wing oil congressman, you know, he recently said, you know, there's going to be a few glitches here. He didn't recently say that. He said that following the expansion of Medicare's Part D program on prescription drugs. So, you know, they know that these kinds of expansions are going to cause problems, but, you know, they'll do anything to kill this. And, you know, there are going to be problems. I don't think anybody expected that 34 states were going to take part in the federal exchange as opposed to having their own individual programs and exchanges like they should. They should all be taking advantage of Medicare and everything else. You'll see lots of big success stories out there, and in the Republican states, we'll have a lot of failure for a while.
But, I mean, take a second to digest that number. They had nearly 20 million people visit the website in the first 3 weeks. I mean, rather than anybody going, wow, there's obviously an incredible demand for affordable health care. You're absolutely right. They're going to find anything. The negative will always be the story, I guess.
Well, I think it's actually both things. First, you've got to mention that part of the reason is that 21 million people tried to get online to do this. Second, you have to say anybody that the government pays $500 million to should be able to build a website that can withstand that traffic. But again, Congress is not willing to look at the reason that we end up hiring folks like this, and this is not a problem unique to Obamacare. This is a problem with 96% of all IT projects that cost more than $10 million, which is a lot of projects, fail.
Right.
And if Congress doesn't want to tackle that issue, they want this to keep on happening.
Yeah. By the way, someone sent me a terrific
Wheel
I don't see this in the media flashback. The new Republican Party website crashes hours after launch.
Yeah.
When the all-new GOP.com premiered in October of 2009, it was a train wreck of glitches, bugs, and failure. It crashed entirely within hours of the launch. No one was able to log on. Later, it accidentally posted the administrator passwords.
Oops.
Well, I mean, you know, in fairness, that was not because of traffic. That was because of incompetence.
Yes, in fairness, right. Nobody even wanted to go on. It was just but, yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
No, I mean, the Republican Party has actually been plagued with problematic web launches and whatnot. They're not very good at this stuff. And it's always, you know, if you go back and look at the archives and read what the Romney campaign said about their abilities online, it's very funny watching them, you know, walk around in circles to explain how great they were online when everybody knows they weren't.
Oh, and what was their whole, was it Orca? What was that?
Yeah.
What was that? Now I'm forgetting exactly what that
Orca,
was.
Orca, which is now being sold at Republican National Committee headquarters as whale jerky.
Hey!
Along with Victor the Victory Elephant.
Right.
I mean, that collapsed on Election Day.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe they didn't really care about Maybe they shouldn't participate in elections until they get those things squared away.
Speaking of elections, so you've seen a lot of the same polling I have, Carl. What do you think about the reality of the Democrats retaking the House?
I think it's going to be difficult in 2014, but you know what? With Hillary Clinton on the ballot in 2016, I think she could have a huge tidal wave election underneath her, where we finish off the House and strengthen the majority in the Senate. And it's going to be very hard. Remember, Republicans have built an institutional advantage here because of gerrymandering. So for them to lose it, they really have to work hard to lose this majority.
And they certainly are.
Well, and one last point about the Obamacare website. If the quality of the website was the quality of the product, we'd just call Daryl Issa ugly because his website is ugly. But just because his website is ugly doesn't mean he's an ugly man. And just because Obamacare's website is not working doesn't mean we should throw Obamacare out the door.
Well, right. And as the president said the other day, it's a lot more than a website. It's a lot of stuff that's already, you know, that people are already benefiting from.
And I can't get a lot of my iMessage clients to messages to show up on my desktop client. So that doesn't mean I should throw out my desktop.
Right.
No. You know, these things will be fixed. The open enrollment period is not just this week. It's for months. So people will have plenty of time to get their plans.
Carl, back to quickly before we go to the elections. We're seeing story after story, of course, about primaries already. Some Republicans are going to be teabagged, and the GOP establishment is running some candidates against the teabaggers. How is that going to play out, that little civil war?
It's going to play out fantastically. I mean, if you thought that the conversations we had in 2012 about this candidate saying that rape was a gift from God and whatnot, you have seen nothing yet. Imagine those things happening all over the country. Right. It's going to get really, really fun watching the Republican Party destroy itself.
Particularly from the fringe that thinks that these teabaggers aren't quite crazy enough.
It's like a virus.
Yeah, they're a little too cooperative.
It's like a virus destroying it from the inside. If only there was some kind of a program that could help them recover.
You know who I think might be a candidate? Crazy House stenographer.
Oh.
You tweeted this week, you said that crazy stenographer removed from the House floor for shouting about God, etc. really wasn't all that different from the House GOP.
No, I mean, they had to tell the sergeant in arms, wait, make sure it's not Bachman. She hasn't really retired yet.
You don't have to remove her yet. Carl Fresh, you are a delight, sir. All right, talk to you next week.
Have a good one.
All right, there he goes. 18 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I got her number off the men's room stall. 1-800-STEP-12.
Stephanie Miller.
Why don't they do what they say? Say what they mean. One thing leads to another. Tell me something wrong. I know I listen to love, but one thing leads to another. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 23 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Governor Jesse Ventura on the big show today, Jim.
Yep.
Apparently there's some...
I'm loaded for bear.
Right. Apparently there's still some controversy around the old... you don't know anything about it, JFK thing. We'll explain
something
later.
That happened 50 years ago.
I could talk about it for hours.
I know.
We only have 8 minutes with him, though, so...
Okay. All right. 1-800-STEP-12 is the phone number. Marianne in Texas. Hey, Marianne.
Hey, everyone seems to have forgotten in healthcare when the Part D program came out. And I work in a nursing homes. I work in a bunch of nursing homes. And we couldn't get medicine for the residents because of the glitches.
Right. So yeah.
Seems to have forgotten that.
It sounds like a glitch. Like, right.
That was a glitch. Yeah. Nobody knew what coverage to put them under. No one explained anything to us. They just threw it and said, here you go. And then come October, everyone was in trouble because no one had medicine.
Yeah, exactly, Marianne. Thank you. Thank you. I was talking to Carl Frisch. There's very few gold stars to give out, I think, in the mainstream media these days. But is this Carol Costello? Is this the I was talking about...
And Representative Renee Elmers.
Right. Well, so Steve Beshear, the governor of Kentucky, was on first and was, you know, talking about that obviously places like Kentucky, his state, where they've enacted the exchanges like they were supposed to, it's working very well. The glitch is few and far between. He said, and he also pointed out history shows that after the implication of Medicare, it took 2 years to get it all working properly. This will work. So... this is from Daily Coast. Later, the CNN host talks to Representative Renee Elmers, Republican of North Carolina, to get the usual other side, and the both sides are to blame, of course, only to have her attempt to completely contradict and dismiss everything Governor Beshear just said. Only something interesting happened. She wasn't having it, the CNN host. And here's the...
Well, you know, I know you just had the clip there of the governor, and God bless him. You know, he's talking about a situation that he supports. But the American people cannot wait for this. There are hard-working taxpayers who are paying for this.
Was the governor joshing us? Is he not telling the truth? Like, why is it working in Kentucky? Does that prove it can work?
I'm not exactly sure it is working in Kentucky. You know, I have some of my colleagues that serve on the Energy and Commerce Committee, and they're not as thrilled with Obamacare in Kentucky as the governor is.
So the governor, when he says he's signing up 1,000 people a day, and he wants to get those 640,000 people in Kentucky insurance, and they're happy about this, he's just saying that for political purposes?
Well, you know, let's look at the grand scheme of things. It is a failure at monumental levels. And hey, if Kentucky's working, that's a bright spot in all of this. But let's be honest. This is a failure. And we know the Obama administration needs thousands more to sign up for this.
Yikes.
And it's just simply not going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, look, let's put a system in place that really will work. You know, I support the American Health Care Reform Act that I worked on with members of the Republican Study Committee to put forward a plan of affordable health care coverage for Americans. You know, let's not go with a system that's broken right from the start. I know the governor mentioned Medicare and that it was put in place in 1965. You know what? I'm going to be 50 next February. I was born in 1964. If we're talking 50 years later about a system that was put in place and finally has worked out the kinks, is that really where we want to go for America?
Well, I will say, I know that you're in favor of getting rid of Obamacare, but the governor also slammed the ongoing fight by some in your party to get rid of the law. Here's what he had to say about that.
They weave this web of misinformation that's been out there for months now.
Yep.
But guess what? Now that these exchanges are open, the people in Kentucky are getting on there and finding out for themselves. And that's what I've told them. I said, look, you don't have to like the president. You don't have to like me, because this is about the president. It's not about me. It's about you. It's about your families. It's about your children. So just go on there and check it out, and you're going to like what you find. And that's what's happening. They are finding that they can get affordable health coverage for the first time in their lives. And I'll guarantee you, about a year from now, they're going to look back at these critics, including a lot of these senators and representatives, and they're going to say, you misled us, because, hey, this works. I've got affordable health care.
Well, you know, yeah, but look.
So he laid out this scenario. So let's say that the effort to fire Kathleen Sebelius is successful and she is fired, but Obamacare is still there and it will be there because you're not going to get rid of it. So will Republicans at some point sit down and say, wow, this is working in Kentucky. Maybe we should really examine what's happening here and fix what's wrong with other health care exchanges across the country?
Well, let's look at another state that actually Obamacare was modeled after, like Tennessee.
Massachusetts.
With PennCare, a monumental failure. I think it lasted about 12 years before they were able to erase the whole entire thing. And it put Tennessee in an economic disaster situation. Is that really what we want for Kentucky? I appreciate the governor's words and the optimism that he has. But the fact of the matter is, I'm looking at results. The results are right now that the Obamacare exchange rollout is a complete failure.
Everything that the Kentucky governor is saying, you're discounting it all instead of sitting down with him and saying, governor, let's talk. Let's figure this out together.
Go, Carol.
Yeah, but look.
Yeah. I'm going to need you to go down storage room.
Monumental failure, 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 failure.
Stephanie Miller.
Where's my wine? All the glasses are in the dishwasher.
Well, use that squeezy bottle that I take to spin class.
Here's your medicine.
Thank you. 34 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. A squeezy bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Yay.
I'm sure you've tried that.
Mm-hmm. Roger in Illinois, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Roger.
Hello, Steph. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm listening to your show, and I keep remembering this argument that when they were debating this health care act, that the individual mandate, wasn't that a Republican idea?
Yes.
Wasn't
yes.
that put forth by them?
Bob Dole.
Bob Dole thought think it was a good idea.
Yeah, they said that they couldn't compete with single payer, and it put all the insurance companies out of business, so they had to do that to keep them in business.
Right. Personal responsibility, trademark Republican Party.
In fact, the original text of the Heritage Foundation's suggestion for the individual mandate has been dug up. It says, many states now require passengers in automobiles to wear seatbelts for their own protection. Many others require anybody driving a car to have liability insurance. But neither the federal government nor any state requires all households to protect themselves from the potentially catastrophic cause of a serious accident or illness. Under the Heritage Foundation plan, there would be such a requirement.
Why, what a Jim Dandy idea.
That's from 1989.
Failure.
Yeah.
But look, you know, we got some new people coming in. You're going to have to move down to storage B.
Oh, that is terrific. Just terrific.
Right.
Thanks, everybody. Really, I really, really appreciate it. It's very special.
Does every Republican congresswoman have that same condescending tone? I think so.
I think so.
I think they do.
Yeah. Marsha Blackburn, Anita Pratt, David, come on now. Okay. We were wondering if only we are that irritated. Okay. By the way, Jonna Helper says, dear Steph, I don't understand all the confusion with the Obamacare startup. Why can't we just have the NSA transfer our information from their service to the service for the healthcare program?
There you go.
That would be helpful. See? These people are thinking, ideas, right? In fact, they probably just heard me suggest that. Do it. Get on it. Okay, David in L.A.
Where did I leave the scissors? They're in the third drawer.
Yeah,
on the left.
Hi.
What? Who said that?
Did you say that Angela Merkel called the president and complained about the spine?
Yeah.
And the president assured her it won't happen. Yeah, he's right, it won't happen. Who was that? What? It's not happening. It won't happen again. Don't
worry. That's a problem, though. That's one of our biggest allies.
Spying on your allies.
When has that ever happened? David in L.A. Sorry, David. Go ahead.
Okay. Can I be the resident old hippie with an MBA for the Stephanie Miller Show?
Oh, please.
Well, I'm actually an IT professional. I've served 3 years in Washington, D.C. on a software project for the Immigration Department. So, it seems like people are very simplistic when they talk about what's required to set up an enterprise-level system like the Obamacare system and stuff like that. And the people who are developing the requirements, they're all on the business side of things, and they don't really understand the IT requirements, and it's really difficult sometimes to translate those requirements into, the actual code that you need to develop to actually automate all these things.
Right.
And it's a very complex process, and it hardly ever works the first time.
Listen, I still don't know how to get pictures out of my computer into printing them. It's all way above my pay grade.
Just send them to Walgreens. You can pick them up there.
Yeah.
Okay. Boy.
All right. Kathleen Sebelius talking about...
I think my job is to get this fully implemented and to get the website working right. And that's really what I'm focused on.
Yeah. It's been a total, colossal, monumental failure.
Debacle.
But look...
You're not writing the HTML code fast enough. Get back to work.
I think it's more than just the HTML code, though.
No, I'm just, she's the one that's actually responsible for the website?
I know.
Okay. She said President Obama, you said this yesterday, Chris, was not informed of the potential red flags until the site went live. But she said there are people in this country who've waited decades for affordable health coverage for themselves and their families. What's clear is we have a product. The product really works. We've created a market where there wasn't a market. Big picture, people. Big picture. Yeah, that's what the Andy Borowitz piece was so funny about. You know, people have waited decades for health care. And it's like, what? I had to wait 3.5 minutes? She said, we've had nearly 20 million people visit the website in the first 3 weeks. And that shows, I think, the pent-up interest that people have in affordable, available health coverage. About 500,000 people have created accounts from the site. She said, it isn't as smooth as we want it to be for the volume of people who want this product. So, yeah, I mean, that is what's hilarious is we keep saying that, you know, the Republicans just last week shut the government down because this was such a horrible product that nobody would want. And now, apparently, people cannot.
Popular.
Right. It's too popular. People can't get the horrible product. Something must be done. Jay Carney.
What the president made clear, and he's on the record saying this, I think, you know, well ahead of the launch, is that we expected hiccups and glitches, as you would expect from the launch of any major complex website.
Glitches and anomalies.
Right.
And the Affordable Health Care Act.
And then he talked some football.
You know, we're going to run this play, and we're going to get 3 yards, and
right.
we're going to keep running it, and we're going to keep making progress.
And then we're going to score a basket.
Right.
What?
Or
no.
Goal of some sort. Jim in Chicago. Hello, Jim.
Yes, Stephanie. First of all, I'm libertarian, so there's one thing I oppose about this. I don't understand why somebody just being born is automatically required to have health care, or health insurance, I should say. I don't see how that could be mandated. I disagree with the Supreme Court's decision regarding that, and I don't know from a libertarian standpoint, how could you be in favor of that?
Well, you're paying for people's health care anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
You're paying for people's health care anyway. You might as well have people pay for their own health care.
But why should it be required?
Do you believe in car insurance? Do you believe in car insurance?
Driving a car is a privilege. It's not like breathing. It's completely different. And I do believe in car insurance. I do. I don't believe in seatbelts. I don't believe in wearing
motor. Okay,
okay, Jim.
You don't believe
Jim?
They exist?
You better have health insurance.
Yeah, Jim. Why wouldn't you be in favor of taking payment for emergency room services off of you? You pay for the poor getting emergency room services as basic health care. Why wouldn't you be in favor of taking that off of you and putting it onto the individual person?
First of all, my taxes are being used for health care. Most of the people that I see are going to county hospital for treatment. That's where they're going. Just so to say that people don't have health care because they don't have health insurance.
Right, but you are paying for that. Why wouldn't you want to take that cost off of you and put it on the person getting the health care?
I don't understand why it's mandated. I just don't.
But
I don't.
I'm giving you a libertarian argument for the individual mandate.
I don't think they have anything to do with each other.
Yes.
I don't. I'm simply requiring, saying, all right, you now have to have it.
Right.
And it's like,
so
well,
when,
why?
But
it's
when,
like
when we say we're entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, doesn't so help? That's it's not a you don't think of it as a right.
No,
a libertarian wouldn't. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really don't. The one last point is that I've known so far there's been a number of people that have been booted off their insurance because of what's going on with the health care issue. And now they're forced to buy it under Obamacare. I believe in the competition. The competition aspect is something that we as libertarians have always been in favor of.
Well, that's what
limited.
This is. It's a lot of insurance companies have to compete. Okay.
Right. I love competition. I'm just saying that was the other aspect.
How are you about stop signs? Do you feel...
I go through a lot of them.
I bet, I bet you do. They're gay and French. Stop signs,
so,
seatbelts.
If you don't believe that people should be required to have health care, then it means you can have a bunch of sick kids sitting in school
right.
with your kids, and
right.
you're sick. Because,
I know, Jim,
what?
But they would be in a libertarian paradise.
Right,
and
when there are no rules of any kind.
That is an important thing.
The
put
laws
your,
of gravity do not...
put on your seatbelt, sir. You seem like a nice man.
Land. Hey, I'm floating through the air. What's happening?
At least he's committed to his libertarianism. I love that. Just no, stop signs. No!
I don't believe in him.
Stop.
You can't tell me what to...
You're not the...
Ow! Ow!
Oh,
if only I had a seatbelt, I'd still have a face.
But I was trying to reason with him with a libertarian argument that he is paying for the health care right. of these people when he should be putting it right on the people who are getting the health care, yeah. not himself.
It's a privilege to have a face, Jim. It's not a right.
And he wasn't buying that. That he wasn't listening.
Yeah, you used a libertarian argument against him.
And it stunned him.
All right. You know where he wants to live? You know where.
Are you tired of your government taking away liberties and freedoms you can't quite name? Are your vague platitudes and third-hand anecdotal facts falling on deaf ears? Well, come secede, or sec-D with us, in the Teabagger Utopia.
Glenn, Becky, Stan.
I will personally come to your house and help you pack.
Your hard-earned money is yours to keep. There are no taxes in
Glenn, Becky, Stan.
Of course, there are no roads, bridges, police, fire protection, no teachers, hospitals, libraries, garbage pickup, or sewage treatment in
Glenn, Becky, Stan.
But hey, who cares about that big government nonsense? You'll feel like our founding fathers as you struggle against the elements, fending off wild animals and your fellow teabaggers when provisions run low and their survivalist training kicks in.
Get off my land!
Who needs government? It's overrated. Join us in
Glenn, Becky, Stan.
We have freedoms with none of the responsibilities. You want to shoot your gun in any direction? Go ahead. Okay. Want to lock your wife and children in the basement? Nobody's asking questions. Remember, freedom isn't free, but with a small down payment, it can be yours for a song.
Above the fruited plain.
Glenn, Becky, Stan.
Our future is in the past.
All right. Oh, speaking of Herman Cain, we have a delightful piece, The Devil and Herman Cain.
Yeah.
Guess who made all those lying whores whore about him? Hmm? Satan, according to Herman Cain. We'll talk about that when we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
A beautifully wrapped, glossy, sweet-smelling show.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Speaking of computer glitches, I just done something to my screen here I've never seen before, ever.
What'd you do?
I'm not even sure how anyone can do that. It won't go away. I don't know. Something, main menu, brightness, contrast. Okay. 51 minutes after... No, yep. It won't go away. Okay. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the
Look
phone
under
number.
Preferences.
Okay, that went away. Jim, who said this is a huge undertaking and there are going to be glitches? Who said that?
Tom Brokaw, I was in our news. There are going to be glitches and anomalies.
No, GOP Representative Joe Barton on the Medicare Part D rollout, which happened under the white guy president.
Yeah.
George Bush. Okay. All right. Oh, can you take your organ out for me? This is from Real Clear Politics, The Devil and Herman Cain.
Oh.
It's been nearly 2 years since allegations of sexual misconduct, you know, the incidents, surfaced. But Herman Cain is fighting back. Cain blamed the media, of course, for doing their due diligence. He insisted all three women who accused him are liars. Then he speculated as to who may have orchestrated the allegations, Jim. The devil.
Ah.
Satan.
Could it be Satan?
Mm-hmm. It made me realize there was a force bigger than right. And that would be the aforementioned.
Oh, yeah, Beelzebub. Doesn't that make our naughty parts tingle?
Yes.
Beelzebub.
Cain, right. Reaches the devil.
Beetlejuice.
Is determined to destroy our culture, and the family is at the center of our culture, and the center of the family is its religious beliefs.
God.
And his belief that all women are lying whores.
Right. Yes.
So it is Satan that affects his family,
Satan
and
the
not
lying horse.
That he is a gropey McGroperson.
One of my favorite bands in the 60s, Satan and the Lying Horse.
Allegedly. He would like to live in that libertarian paradise that our last caller referred to. You know, the kind with no... The kind with no food inspectors or regulation of any kind.
Come on down to Used Foods Emporium. Thanks to President Cain, all of our used foods are now 100% tax-free. This week's specials are assorted sun-dried mammals, only 99 cents a pound. You can't resist that crunchy goodness. Be sure to visit the produce department for fresh found fruit from neighboring grocery store dumpsters. We have the softest apples in town. That's a fact. While you're at Used Foods Emporium, stop by the hot used foods table for a wide variety of body temperature dishes freshly eliminated and regurgitated by our friendly staff. All the live long day. And don't forget, all of our used foods are 100% tax-free. This week, kids get free ABC gum with a purchase of $20 or more. Used Foods Emporium, now with 999 convenient locations.
I forgot all about Herman Cain's used food.
We have the softest apples in town.
Okay. Let's start with Mary in Houston. Hi, Mary. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
Hi. Oh, I just have a comment. I'm an advocate for the health care plan. I just don't understand why the Obama administration has not done a better job of selling it and explaining why there are these glitches. First of all, even though it was approved and voted into law years ago, the funding for it was not actually provided to the companies to do the website until just a few months ago. And the website was not even in development until just a few months ago, so the beta testing could not be done.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the amount of money that was given to the company to actually do the website was far below what most companies would even charge. So I just don't understand why that's not getting explained, as well as the fact that I don't understand why when the Republicans were advertising all of the potential problems with the healthcare plan, that it was going to devastate our economy and all of these things, why we weren't combating all of that with good education for the American public.
Yeah.
Like your last caller, he did not understand that when someone does not have healthcare, I used to volunteer over at, I'm from the Houston area. I used to volunteer at the ER in Memorial Hermann. And in the med center, and you would see people coming into the ER for flus and colds and minor things that could easily be treated in the doctor's office, but they had no health care.
Right.
So they're never going to pay that bill, which could amount to thousands.
Exactly. Well, exactly. All right. And we get that's what we were trying to explain to him, that we all pay for it, and that's like the premise. I don't know. I think the problem is there has been such an incredible wall of misinformation and deliberately put out there by Republicans and, you know, Fox News and like that is hard to combat. I mean, I think it's hard to have had less help in any way trying to implement this. Let's go to Justin in Jersey. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Justin.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. All right. I just heard your last caller. Oh, man. All right. First of all, her point on regard to going to these hospitals for these minor things, we're not accounting on regard to people like myself, who's 26 years old and younger, her parents, but, you know, you can scratch that parent stuff out. We really don't need to be going on any type of insurance because we rarely have any issues. We don't have any pre-existing conditions like that. I'm not 46, 51, 65.
I see. You're young, so you don't need insurance. Okay.
So you're costing everybody else.
Right. Oh, okay.
That's not how insurance works,
I'm
dude.
Young, so I don't have anything. Oh, I see. I'm young, so I don't have a pre-existing condition. Yeah. So no one young ever has a pre-existing condition.
Yeah, no one young ever gets in a car accident or anything like that.
All right. 58 minutes after the hour, Governor Jesse Ventura and more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeehaw! 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Governor Jesse Ventura coming up on the big show this hour. Comedian Dean Obadalla next hour. All right. StephanieMiller.com, the website. You can email us all there. Rocky Mountain Micah emailed me there about the... Have you seen this? The hidden room inside Mitt Romney's new Utah house?
No.
Yes. The front door of Mitt Romney's soon-to-be-constructed holiday house opens in a massive living room, and to your left around the fireplace lies a study. If you look closely at the bookshelves there, you will find something interesting, a secret door.
Oh.
The second bookshelf from the far wall is really a door that swivels out to reveal a hidden room.
Put the candle back.
Listen to me very carefully. Put the candle back.
How many times do I have to tell you, Anne?
Oh, my God, that is straight out of Young Frankenstein.
I wonder if it's like a panic room or something.
I don't know.
Put the candle back.
Someone called Jodie Foster. I'm in the panic room. Shh. Oh, okay. I was melding the movie where she's listening for the whole movie. Contact.
Yeah.
Shh. I hear something.
I didn't care for that movie. Panic Room I liked.
I'm in the panic room. Okay. All right. So, look. The Obama website debacle is up. This is the Chiron
again. Oh, there's Marsha Blackburn.
Yeah, well, we just got to shut the whole thing down. It's just a debacle. Good God. Okay, I'm growing weary of this whole... I thought that I was talking last hour about Governor Beshear. I thought made the best point. It took 2 years to get Medicare straight. People act like we have no history of anything.
Right.
This has not ever happened before. Dana Milbank writes a great piece about all this in... The Washington Post: Democrats own health care. And it's sort of about how they're going to blame Obamacare for everything, no matter what. I mean, this is just, you keep thinking that they have finally lost, like this last loss of 1,000 million losses they've had on Obamacare, but they keep going. Dana writes, the biggest problem facing Obamacare today will probably haunt it long after the technical problems at healthcare.gov are fixed. Because of all the noise and disinformation, President Obama and the Democrats don't just own Obamacare as a political issue. They own healthcare. Anytime something bad happens, premiums rise, employers change plans or pair coverage, Obamacare will be blamed, even if the new law had nothing to do with coverage. With the change. How many times have we had a caller that's like, oh, I blah, 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 blah. And you're like, okay, that's like this couple on Hannity. Mm-hmm. Oh, our small business, we can't hire because of Obamacare. They have 4 employees.
Yeah.
There's nothing in Obamacare that has to do with companies with...
Except for letting your employees know about healthcare.gov.
Thank you. Yes.
That's the only requirement.
Communism like that. One consultant said if anyone has a problem with healthcare, Republicans say it has to be a problem with Obamacare. Nobody said Obamacare was a panacea for everything.
Right.
I mean, anyway, he was talking about premiums were up last year about 4%, a much slower growth rate than the average annual increase of 13.2% between 1999 and 2008, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. But it's easy to blame Obamacare for something that would have happened anyway. And Jackie Schechner always used to say this, that anything that insurance company does bad or a douchey employer does bad, they're going to go, oh, see, it's Obamacare.
Right.
Obamacare made me do it.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, Cruz and others have cited the case of UPS dropping coverage for 15,000 of its employees' spouses because spouses can get health insurance from their own employers. UPS did blame its move on Obamacare, but it's the same sort of thing employers have done for years.
Mm-hmm.
Long before Obamacare, as many as a quarter of all businesses each year made reductions in health care coverage. The only difference now, businesses can blame Obamacare. In a lot of cases, it's just a convenient excuse.
Yeah. Right.
Another charge that Obamacare is a job killer. You know, they're talking about, oh, it's creating just all these part-time jobs. Moody's Analytics said factors other than Obamacare were at work. Most of the new jobs were in industries that always use more part-time workers, but the new law gets the blame. So anyway, he finishes by saying that this is, the bulk of the sign-up problems have been in the states led by critics of the law who refuse to cooperate with the federal government on the rollout. Essentially, Republicans are complaining about flaws created in part by their own sabotage. And now they're on TV this morning investigating what went wrong with the thing they did everything they could to sabotage. Well, what could it be, I wonder? Maybe you, asshats!
Let's see who's behind this. Oh, it's me! Oops.
Okay. All right. Dan in Chicago. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Dan.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, under the current system, if somebody without health care insurance goes to the hospital emergency room, we're paying for all that. Under the Affordable Care Act, somebody who doesn't have insurance or can't afford it gets a subsidy so that they can afford insurance to go to the emergency room. So who's paying for the subsidy? Are we all paying for the subsidy that they get? So isn't that sort of like a distinction without a difference?
Okay. Well, first of all, one of the stories just today in the paper is that the because premiums are so much lower than were expected, the subsidies are a lot less than expected. So everything is going to cost even less, and the deficit reduction is going to be even more than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
But we're all still paying for it, correct? I mean, we still haven't stopped that.
We're paying for our own individual health insurance.
But I'm also paying to help subsidize somebody who can't afford it.
You're still going to be paying less than the way we were doing it, where we're paying for everyone that goes to the emergency room.
But there's no way to really quantify if I'm paying less than I was before.
Yeah, there is.
The Congressional Budget Office does it all the time.
Take a listen now. There, Skippy. I mean, Skeeter. New study says Obamacare will save the government a lot of money. Uh-oh. Here's the Obamacare story you won't be hearing from Republicans. Premium prices have come in much lower than expected, and because of the amount the government will be paying out in subsidies will be lower than expected. That means the government will be saving money, a lot of money, and the deficit reduction built into the law will increase a lot.
Right, so it's a disaster.
Right.
Debacle, on every level.
Other words. Lower than projected premiums under the Affordable Care Act will save the federal government $190 billion over 10 years and increase the law's deficit reduction by 174% to almost $300 billion, says a new analysis.
Only 174%? I could do better than that.
Of course you could. The Boner yesterday, John Boner. House.
Clearly, there's problems with the website. But I would argue that the problems go much further than that. How about the report over the last couple of days of the hundreds of thousands of Americans who are finding out that they're going to lose their coverage?
Huh?
And he got that report from?
His ass.
His ass.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Glenn Beck's
ass.
His orange ass.
Mm-hmm. It's our job to hold them accountable. And when it comes to Obamacare, clearly, there's an awful lot that needs to be held accountable.
Don in Chicago. Hi, Don.
Hi.
Hello.
I was trying to say Don, the last caller. I'm like, wait, I start talking, and I'm like, wait, some other guy.
Wait a minute. Go ahead. It's the real Don from Chicago now. Here he is.
The real Don.
All right.
I actually called to call you out on something, and I maybe being mean a little bit here, but I hope I'm not. You say kids go to school sick, and now with this change, they have more opportunity not to be sick. That's the gist of it. I don't really agree with that in one aspect. Is, you know, 99% of the people out there who bring their kids to the doctors, they say, go home and give them Tylenol. They say, you know, you just wasted money coming here. The kids come to the ER, they have a 100-degree fever, what are you doing here? You know, have them blow their nose, get some bed rest, give them some soup, and get to bed. I don't think this whole thing is necessarily going to affect the sick kids. I think it affects more of people with pre-existing conditions and aspect of having them not have to fear going to the hospital, having them, you know, be able to if they need to when they really are sick. Not the whole, oh, poor kids, they have a flu, they're going to go to sick, and now with this whole thing, they won't get other kids sick. That's still going to happen. But my comment also is I don't agree with people having to pay and then get subsidies after for people who are low income at certain points. I understand that people can get really reduced rates.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for me, I'm in a tax bracket of about $45,000 to $55,000 family income. Right now, I'm in a registry job, meaning I don't get benefits. And so for me to have to pay first and get money later, that is nice. That really does help. But it still kind of defeats the purpose that, you know, I'm still having to pay first. You're trying to help me, but I don't have the income to pay, and then you're forcing me to pay. Otherwise, you're
going
to find me.
Don, I'm a little confused. We started with the sick kids, and I'm not even – what was the point of that?
Okay.
Well, what's your point?
The talking point is saying – I remember you saying that, you know, you're going to help the kids now. They have the opportunity to go to the doctors instead of sending sick kids to school. Something like that was said within the last 30 minutes.
But you're saying people take kids to the doctor too much now? Is that your point?
It's sort of my point. You're using it as, I see you guys using that as a talking point, meaning like,
but
you know,
what are you basing that on?
If your kid is sick, you shouldn't take him to the doctor?
Okay. Let me give you an example. You go to the doctor, kid has a 100-degree fever. He has the flu. What is the doctor going to do? They're not going to prescribe him anything. I mean, I'm a sick kid. Yeah, there's certain levels you bring a kid to school.
But you should take your kid to the doctor to make sure that it's not the start of something a lot more serious.
Okay. I'm a healthcare professional.
Okay.
I'm a pulmonologist. I'm a,
you're
I'm
what?
A nurse. And I'm a pulmonologist.
Oh, great.
I'm
you
a
are.
Nurse. I'm a respiratory therapist.
Okay.
Great.
You send a kid. The kid comes in 99% of the time. You look on meta. You know.
Right.
You look online, you could find.
But you never know without a professional opinion whether it's the start of something a lot more awful or not.
Right.
It's kind of irresponsible not to take your kid. I mean, it's great that a lot of these kids don't have more serious things going on. But what if your kid does? You're an irresponsible parent if you don't take your kid to the doctor. Hmm.
Jim, am I wrong to suspect that he just happened to be a pulmonologist at the right moment in that conversation?
Yeah.
A respiratory therapist and a nurse?
Right. Okay. Also, I do a trapeze act.
Okay. All right. Well, right.
Okay.
All right. All right. 17 minutes after the hour, we roll along on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Just stay on this frequency. We'll be right with you. Just stay on this frequency.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
I'm on it. I'm on it. I'm down on it. Okay, I'm there.
Thank you. Thank you. It is the...
I already did.
Okay.
Leave me alone.
There were a lot of orders back in the disco days, weren't there?
Right.
Get down on it.
Right. Get your back up off the wall. Get down on it.
Yikes.
Do the hustle.
Do it.
Steigen Sie herunter darauf.
22 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free.
Third Reich disco.
Yeah.
Hard to...
Yeah, it's hard to discern the difference.
See, that's why I like Bubble Butt, because it's like the good old days, right? Tells you what to do. Stick it out. Shake it, something, right?
Yeah, but it's ordering you to do that.
Right. Bubble Butt, Bubble Butt.
Stephanie Miller.
Bubble butt. Right. Bubble hang on. Stick it out.
Too many instructions.
Around. Yeah, exactly.
They're ordering you to do things.
Right.
Do you have to be able to blow bubbles out your butt?
How'd that one song's very confusing. Put your hand up on my hip, and when you dip,
we dip, and then we both dip.
And then also.
Poof.
All right.
Remove funny bone. Ha, ha, ha.
Caitlin in Los Angeles. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello. Hi, Caitlin. Caitlin, am
Hi.
I saying that right? Hi.
I just wanted to talk about, I have a relative who was doing what you were just talking about earlier, blaming the Affordable Care Act for the fact that her employer was cutting a ton of people from health coverage, and it's a huge corporation. And I had to convince her, it's not the Affordable Care Act, it's your employer trying to save money and using it as an excuse, just like you were saying.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's for particularly people that are politically inclined like that. It's a perfect excuse to blame Obama, right?
Exactly. And I said, just because they're using it as an excuse, you can't blame it. You have to see that, you know, they're just taking it as the perfect opportunity to do what they would have wanted to do anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's only one thing to do now, and that means and that is the president needs to resign.
I mean, the president himself seems embarrassed by it. And if he's not going to resign over this mess, why he ought to decide
on.
He should.
What? That was that Lamar Alexander.
Nice try.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Great.
He lost every fight. Maybe he'll just quit now. What is he, Sarah Palin?
Ah!
Aldis in Madison. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Aldis.
Good morning. You know, I just want to address a couple of things that some of your other callers have been saying. First of all, I am way to the left of President Obama myself, but let me just defend a couple of things going on here. If you are sick and tired of paying for other people's care, I don't understand how paying less for that is worse than paying more.
Right.
These people are just out of it. It's like, well, if I can't pay nothing, it's no good. Who the hell are these people?
And I heard they're the ones calling the rest of us moochers.
Yeah.
Well, and no kidding. And then for kids going to school sick, okay, if that person was a pulmonologist, I'm you, Stephanie. All I can tell you right now is this. If you go and take your kid to the doctor, you get what's called a doctor's note. All of us who go to work know about these things. You can then have the kid stay home, not infect the rest of his class, not get you sick, you dumbass.
Thank you, Aldis. You got that out of the lot in his crawl this morning.
Yes.
Yeah, by the way, Paula writes about the call, the driver with called about with no car insurance. Uh-huh. So does that person think it's right that he, with car insurance, should be paying for all the damages, injuries, et cetera, when an uninsured driver hits him?
That's right.
Thank you very much. You're smartest girl in class. Fair point.
Just common sense.
Oh, all right. Representative Rick Nolan.
And the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, whatever you want to call it, has done, in my judgment, great damage and harm to the brand. And I think the president should man up and let us know who is responsible, who is in charge here, and fire him.
Fire him. Just know who's in charge and fire him.
Yes, because the Republicans were so helpful with the brand before this.
Yeah.
The brand. Okay. Joe in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hello, Joe. Hi, Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Hello.
Hello, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm self-employed, and I pay for my own health insurance, have for a long time, at least 10 years with Blue Cross. And every year they send us our letters and let us know how much more they're going to jack us up this year. And usually it's around 10% or 20%. And I don't remember exactly, but it's substantially more this year, and they seem to be blaming it and sort of like sideways kind of on the Affordable Care Act. And there, and also in the letter, it tells us that, you know, we have the option to sign up for the Affordable Care Act and possibly get lower rates. But they sort of threaten us that if we do that, we will never be able to get back to our grandfathered in quotations rates, you know, that we're enjoying now.
Wow.
And I mean, I don't know if that's,
Joe, that's
is
I
that
mean,
a this, legal for them to do that.
See, this is what, you know, Jackie was talking about a lot of times. Is this is exactly the point. Not just some employers, but some insurance companies are going to take advantage of this to go, oh, and it's, you know, the Affordable Care Act's fault. When, as you said, they've been jacking them every year. I think I have we have Blue Cross Anthem, and you're right. We've been dealing with this for years.
But we can't find out any information here in North Carolina because they've actually made it illegal for anyone in the state to help or assist you in any way with questions you may have about it.
Wow.
I mean, they literally have made it illegal. And
How so?
Well, they've passed laws that no state employees, or I don't even think, I could be wrong about this, but I don't even think contractors who are working for the state in that capacity can even answer your questions or even tell you a phone number where you can get those questions answered. They're not allowed to. This is, you know, look who we got running the place now. So,
well, I mean, if I were you, I would check out healthcare.gov, though. Do you know what I mean? Because that's what, I mean, what they're telling you is correct in that you can, if you can do better on the exchange, you know, I would go do it. I think that's the whole point, right? I mean, Kathy in Minneapolis, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner in Minnesota, and I just had a couple comments about the pulmonologist that called earlier. I'm not sure actually what
in,
you said.
In
what
air quotes, said. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I think the thing that, you know, we have to just go back to is this being offered so people can have insurance so they can go to the doctor for preventative medicine. And also to cover the catastrophic, you know, if their child is hospitalized, and I work a lot with babies that were born prematurely, those are million-dollar babies. Nobody can afford that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's just, it's out there to help people get insurance. It's not out there to, you know, be nefarious. It's not out there to, you know, do anything to your rights as a person who's employed to get your employer's insurance. But I think there's just a lot of misunderstanding about what preventative care is.
Yeah, well, it's something, by the way, that saves us all money in the long run. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
A woman who has a sandwich named after her at the Betty Ford Clinic.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show.
You know, I'm a pulmonologist myself.
Are you?
In that I'm looking at Bill Pullman's IMDb page.
Yes,
he was in a TV movie called The Virginian. History is Made at Night, Broke Down Palace, Lake Placid. He's got quite a... Independence Day, of course.
Thank you. Uh-huh. All right.
So I'm a pulmonologist now.
Why am I always suspect that it's not until the middle of a conversation that somebody suddenly pulls out some expertise from their arse?
Right.
I am a pulmonologist and respiratory therapist.
And nurse.
Where good doctors have bold ideas. Voucher Hospital.
Brought to you by Filner Spittoons with state-of-the-art saliva collection technology.
Nurses to the nurses.
Doctor, we have an emergency. A patient with an acute subdural hematoma.
That's right, doctor. He has increased intracranial pressure, hemorrhaging of the temporal parietal locus, and must undergo endoscopic surgery immediately.
Yes, I concur. Prep for surgery at once.
Wait, doctor. There's a discussion about Obamacare on AM radio.
The deal will soon take on a much different meaning.
I must take this. Everyone stand by.
But, doctor, what about the patient?
You don't understand. I'm a surgeon who listens to both sides and stumbled upon this argument on my way to surgery. I must respond. Nurse, give me that phone.
Nurse, give him that phone stat.
Tune in to Voucher Hospital next time to see if Obamacare covers Obama derangement syndrome.
Oh, that was the guy that just stepped out of surgery, remember? Yep. He actually did say, I am a surgeon.
I am a sturgeon. No,
right.
Sorry.
No.
He said it towards the end of the conversation,
right,
in order to add gravitas to everything that came before.
Right, his complaints about Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Who's the one that whose Obamacare had just called? Right,
yes, Obama, yes, he was
Obamacare calling.
He was a small business owner.
Right.
Who listens to both sides.
Right.
And he said, Obamacare just sent me a letter.
Obamacare to send me a letter.
Brad in Manhattan, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Brad.
Hello, Stephanie. Good morning. Just a very quick point. You had a caller before who said, we pay for the uninsured when they go to the emergency room as taxpayers. So what's the difference now that if we pay for the subsidy they're going to get, we still wind up paying? There was one point left that he left out, is that the health insurance company now has to pay the rest of his medical bill once we've paid for his subsidy. Whereas when he has no insurance, we pay, through taxpayers, every penny of his medical bill. But when he's got insurance, the company has to pay a good part back. And he did not seem to understand that.
He did not. Thank you, Brad.
Right-wingers don't understand a lot of things.
And our friend Jody Hamilton texts me, the $700 billion in savings in Medicare will help with the subsidies as well. We forget that particular fun fact as well, because they're such fiscal conservatives, you know. Okay, John in Missouri, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, John.
Yes, Stephanie. I'm 64 years old. I got another year before I get on Medicare. And
you're what, did you say?
I want fixed income.
Uh-huh.
He has another year before he can get on Medicare.
Oh, got it.
Okay, my partner and I, he's a full-time college student. He's going to nursing school. I'm paying for all the bills. And with what I make, there's no way in the world I can afford $200-$300 a month for insurance. We barely get by on about $200 extra a month to live on.
Right, so that means you probably qualify for the subsidies.
Yep, or even Medicaid.
In Missouri, they didn't... what I want to look for, reinstate or re-up the medical. So, you know, can we either one get on Medicare or Medicaid? I don't know.
You're going to have to contact Medicaid and find out what the qualifications are and see if you match
those
qualifications.
More importantly, how young is your boyfriend, John?
He's 40. He just turned 40.
You go, boy.
That's the only thing I care about. Yeah. My boyfriend's at college, so really? Come on. Got yourself a youngin. Good job. Nicely done, sir.
Well played.
Teresa in Chicago. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Teresa.
Hello. You know, I just wanted to say you have so many callers who try to equate healthcare as a commodity, just like any other commodity. That's the favorite libertarian talking point.
Right.
And it's not. Healthcare doesn't operate the same way as other commodities do. First of all, people don't choose to get cancer. They don't choose to have a genetic disease. And most people don't choose to get into a car accident. So it doesn't work in that manner. And then if somebody goes out and purchases a car that they can't afford, it gets repossessed. If somebody gets sick and has to have a heart transplant, we don't come in and repossess that heart.
Right,
right.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. And so people are trying to shove healthcare into a commodity-based free market principle.
Why did Dick Cheney just pop into my thought bubble?
Yeah.
If I only had a heart.
And to that caller who's like, well, we pay for them anyway, it's a hell of a lot cheaper to pay for somebody pre-diabetes than to pay for them once they have it so bad that you have to, they go to an emergency room and they have to have additional care or they have to have a limb amputated. It's way cheaper. So if we were more preventative, like other countries who have universal health care, then the cost wouldn't be the same.
Yep,
exactly. By the way, speaking of Dick Cheney, tomorrow hopefully we'll have the audio for you. Did you hear Rush Limbaugh interviewed him? If seriously, if you need to take off a couple of pounds, any liberal listening, you will vomit. It was the biggest circle jerk I've ever heard.
You are a fine American. You are such a great man, sir. Oh, well, Rush, that means not really a lot coming from you.
It's like, oh, God.
I just think I'm going to buy a
splat.
By the way, there's a drone with your name on it. So, watch what you say.
Okay. Let's go to Grant in Oklahoma. Hello, Grant. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Stephanie, first of all, I'd like to say to you, and I go way, way back. I know that you don't know me, but you were on the very bottom of the dial out in Los Angeles when I came back from the first Gulf War.
Wow.
And you were on the radio before the funniest guy on radio, Phil Hendry.
Ah.
You remember him?
Oh, yeah. On KFI, right. Yeah, 1,000 years
That's
ago.
That's right. You and me go way, way back.
All right.
Anyway,
all right.
I've always enjoyed your show. I wanted to challenge Jim also on the on the deal about that, you know, we shift the cost back to the poor people. We don't because we're paying the subsidy. But I want to go in a different direction with that. Mm-hmm. And say,
by the way, Jim Ward's the funniest guy in radio, but all right, go ahead. We already disagree. Go ahead.
Okay. I think we should go to a single-payer Medicare for everybody.
Me too.
Because a little bit of money from everybody goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's what they do in civilized countries.
That's correct.
Exactly. Most modern democracies.
Yes.
Why can't we get that? By the way, we mentioned...
Because we're the world's arsenal. We were, anyway.
Right. By the way, we mentioned this yesterday. Washington Post issues hilarious correction about Navy captain's muscular build.
Yeah.
Gawker says the Washington Post may have just issued one of the funniest, most unnecessary corrections of all time. The Post informed its readers Wednesday that Navy captain Robert Duran should have been described as muscular and not thick-set. Fatty's a little sensitive, I guess.
I'm not thick set.
And
if
you're fatty, 2x4 is a little bit tetchy.
I'm your big bone.
If you saw the picture of him that Gawker had with that story, he was neither.
Right.
He was skinny.
Right. He's sort of normal.
Yeah. Just average.
Normal and oversensitive.
Maybe he was a fat kid. I totally get him.
Tony in New Mexico. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Tony.
Hi, guys. Hey, I'd like to address this typical Republican hypocrisy. Bless their picking little hearts. They're demanding that somebody be fired or resign over a website not working properly.
Yes.
Using their logic, now look, somebody should resign or be fired over a budget not being passed, a government shutdown, economy being damaged. I don't get it. What's their issue?
Yeah, what is their main damage?
What is their damage,
$24 billion they blew? 120,000 jobs?
Who do we see about that?
A Beyonce a day.
Thank you. Sonia in Sacramento, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Sonia.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
Love you guys. Love all of you guys.
Thank you.
Anyways, the point that I was going to make was the guy who was bitching about the fact that we were supposed to pay for the subsidies, that's what that medical device tax was all about. We were supposed to raise, like, billions of dollars over that small percentage of a tax that they were going to tax those medical devices.
Right.
And that was supposed to help offset the costs.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's why they were trying to get rid of it, because that would be something that might further screw up the entire thing. By the way, we got a tweeter went rogue. They caught him.
Oh, yeah, they went rogue.
Oh, God.
Oh, they went rogue.
This is a little troubling. A senior White House official who was helping negotiate nuclear issues with Iran was fired after being unmasked as the acidic voice behind a Twitter account known for its insult of public figures at the White House and on Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
Joseph
Jofi.
That's his name, I guess.
Okay.
All right. Sent hundreds of anonymous and abrasive tweets using the handle NatSecWonk.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yes, Jay Carney had some.
I mean, there are obviously codes of conduct in general, and but this on specific instances or even a broad question like that, I don't have anything for you. White House employees are not able to access social media sites like that at all.
Yeah, he got really like misogynistic on the female staffers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was a little uncomfortable.
Yes, although the one thing pretty much anyone could have agreed with was Huma Abedin wearing beer goggles when she met Nancy Wiener. David in Georgia, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, David.
Hey, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
I just wanted to comment on those couple of fellows that called in, like the guy that was saying, well, who's going to pay for that subsidy? It's like, well, first of all, aren't you guys the ones with all the moral high ground and telling us how we can, you know, what we need to do in our bedroom, yada, yada. But when it comes to maybe helping somebody out, you know, oh, no, you know, that's not part of my religious belief or moral thinking. And the guy that's like where the doctor says, just take your kid home and give him Tylenol, kind of thinking he probably doesn't have kids.
Yeah. The pulmonologist.
Yes, but you forget the fact that he is a pulmonologist and a respiratory therapist and also a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. You know, I've got two kids. I've taken them to the doctor for 15, 16 years. And, you know, I don't recall once where he said, you know, don't go to Kroger and buy your medicine.
Right. Please. You know, I just took my dog Fred to the vet because he had a little... Yeah, because I thought it was a puncture thing, and it was they're like, yeah, he has a little black eye from a raccoon or something. Just put Neosporin.
As a pulmonologist, I can tell you that Bill Pullman was in A League of Their Own as Bob Hinson.
Thank you.
And Newsies as Brian Detton. And in something called Liebestraum as Paul Kessler.
Thank you,
I wonder if
you
spoke German in that.
All right. Thank you. All right. Hey, Jim, guess what? There's apparently still some controversy surrounding the JFK assassination.
Really? 50 years later.
Uh-huh.
I was not aware of that.
Uh-huh. There apparently are 63 reasons to believe there was a conspiracy to assassinate JFK, and we will talk to Governor Jesse Ventura about them. Well, I'll be in the hammock. You'll be talking to him next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Now, what is this mess?
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Mm. 51 minutes after the hour, Jim Ward's life just gets more and more magical. Not only does he get to spend 3 hours a day with me, he got leftover steak today, and he gets to talk to Governor Ventura about the JFK.
And I got nothing.
You get nothing, sir.
You get nothing.
All right. The book is They Killed Our President, 63 Reasons to Believe There Was a Conspiracy to Assassinate JFK. Good morning, Governor Ventura.
Hi, Stephanie. How are you today?
I'm good. Only 63.
There's probably more.
Well, we had to pare it down. I guess we could have did 160.
Damn editors.
You know, but we also, it was the design. He was killed in 63, right. So it had a good ring to it. So we thought we'd do 63, and that would be the significance of it.
Mm-hmm. And I read something new about you. When you were a teenager, back in the 60s, you believed the Warren Commission.
Well, I think we all did. I mean, I was 12 years old when it happened, and then unfortunately, about a year later, along came the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and kind of distracted an entire generation.
Right.
Yeah.
But and then I came back to it when I got out of the Navy. I was going to junior college for 1 year, and Mark Lane happened to come to my junior college, and of course, he was the first person to truly question the Warren Commission.
Right.
And that's when I really thought, wow, you mean what the government, what they told us wasn't true? And then when it got to the mid-80s and wrestling changed and I started flying everywhere, I started buying every book I could get on the Kennedy assassination. It became a real hobby to read about it in airports and on flights while I was doing my wrestling career.
Wow. Obviously, the thing we all remember, the Zapruder film. What does the Zapruder film prove in your opinion?
Well, first of all, you need to look at, we would have never seen the Zapruder film. The Time Life had bought it. They were putting it under wraps. And the only reason the Zapruder film came to light was Jim Garrison's trial in the latter 60s when he subpoenaed it.
Mm-hmm.
He somehow learned of it. And otherwise, the American public would have never seen the Zapruder film. My question is, why not?
I didn't see it till 1975 when Geraldo Rivera showed it on TV. Yeah,
there you go. And why not? And why was that withheld from us if what they told us was true?
Because the president was hit twice from the front and twice from behind. And everyone who saw him, everyone, every nurse, every orderly, every doctor, every Secret Service agent saw a huge hole in the back of his head. It was a 7 by 5 centimeter bit of the occipital bone that flew back onto the trunk of the limo.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, in light of that fact, the shot could not have come from the back. It came from the front. All those doctors and nurses also testified to entrance wound in his throat and right above his right temple.
Right.
And that was all, of course, ignored when they stole the president's body and took it back to Bethesda.
Well, yes, it was actually choppered to Walter Reed before Bethesda. That was something that NPR came out with this several years ago. It was recordings about the Kennedy assassination. It was all pretty benign stuff, except for that, when they confirmed David Lifton's theory that the body was hijacked, and they did...
And the one thing you need to know, even on what we know, is actual, thanks to Harold Weisberg, the actual x-rays of his skull prove that Oswald didn't do it, because there was metal particles scattered throughout the president's skull, which means he was hit with a flangible bullet, which is an exploding bullet. And the Oswald rifle cannot shoot that round. It shoots only a full metal jacket Geneva Convention round. So that right there proves that the fatal shot to the head couldn't have come from the Oswald weapon. And then, you know, you go on to other details like that likewise prove that it couldn't have come from the Oswald weapon at all.
Well, for one thing, Oswald wasn't up there on the sixth floor. He was down in the lunchroom
before
and immediately after. He was still there. The police, you know, guy got off his motorcycle and ran into the building and said, "Who's this guy?" "Oh, that's Oswald. He works here." And he was
also drinking a Coke.
Right, right.
And when they tried to recreate his run from the shooter nest down to the second floor, the timing wouldn't work unless he didn't buy the Coke.
And
so later on, they scratched off that he was found with a Coke. They lined through that because they had to eliminate that to try to make the time work.
And also, the Manica Carcano didn't have his prints on it. Friday night, it was clean. Monday morning, suddenly they had a print, and there's a story behind that.
Well, the other thing funny, too, if you look at the Manica Carcano, and in fact, I'm looking at one right now in a photo, they said he carried it into the building and said it was curtain rods under his armpit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Manlicher has a wooden stock that goes almost out to the actual end of the barrel. It comes within 4 to 5 inches. I'm 6'4", and I cannot cup the stock and put it under my armpit. Oswald, on all of his measurements, was never any taller than 5'10".
Right. And
so how could me, 6 inches taller than him, I can't get the stock under my armpit, but the Warren Commission said he carried it in and told his co-workers it was curtain rods.
But also the scope was misaligned. It hadn't been sighted in. No one could have, you know, done all the damage.
It needed two shins put in it, and they had to actually fix the scope to put it on alignment. And they want us to believe that this is the weapon that killed the president.
Right.
This is like a different language listening to you two talk. But one thing popped out of me I want to ask about. You say to what extent presidents Gerald Ford, Richard Nixon, George H.W. Bush, and Lyndon Johnson were involved. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, Lyndon was neck deep in it. He ordered the limousine to be cleaned and refurbished Monday morning. That's obstruction of justice. He stood to gain the most. He was neck deep in the Billy Saul Estes, Bobby Baker scandals, and very well could have gone to jail for them. Well, that all magically disappeared.
Right.
Then you go to the other presidents. Gerald Ford admitted changing where the bullet entered Kennedy's back. He moved it up 2 to 3 inches so that it would fit with the magic bullet theory. Now, how do you do that?
Right.
How do you have a predetermined conclusion and then fix the evidence to that conclusion and then tell the public you did an investigation? No, you didn't.
Well, the autopsy...
And the list goes... H.W. Bush didn't know where he was at that day.
Right.
There's not a human on the planet that doesn't know where they were at.
He was in Dealey Plaza, actually. There's a picture of him in front of the
photo, and if it's not him, it's his twin brother.
Right.
You know, because it sure looks like him in Dealey Plaza. But anyway, I won't say it is definitively him, but it certainly looks like him.
Wow.
And Nixon, you even have Nixon on the very Watergate tapes, stating on the tapes that the Warren Commission was the biggest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people.
Gov, as always, we could talk to you all morning, but we are out of time. They killed our president. 63 reasons to believe there was a conspiracy to assassinate JFK. Always a pleasure, Governor Ventura.
Thank you, Stephanie. We'll do it again. Keep up the good work.
You too, sir. All right. I didn't get to the operative question. I'll ask Jim after the break as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour tomorrow, sexy liberal John Fugel saying yes.
Yes.
On the big show. And finally, the big sexy liberal announcement tomorrow.
It's about time.
Boy, we have more glitches than the, you know, glitches and anomalies on the...
than the website.
Roll out of Affordable Care Act. We are ready to rock and roll, and a whole bunch of 2014 shows announced next week.
And Michael Tomasky on tomorrow's show as well.
Who I'd like to date and kiss and marry.
That's right.
All right. Speaking of which, Jim, in a really non-gay way, would like to do that with Governor Jesse Ventura. That was a fabulous interview, Jim. It was like a separate language.
Right.
They speak JFK.
Right.
Yeah.
I'd like to recommend another book called JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters by James W. Douglas, with two S's, like Frederick Douglass. It includes, among other things, the entire commencement speech at American University, in which President Kennedy pretty much signed his own death warrant because he was trying to stop the Cold War before it went any further.
Whenever I see Jim when he's at a party at my house and I see him like head to head with someone, I know it's, I don't even have to go over there, I know it's,
they're talking about
JFK.
Yeah. He also signed the National Security Action Memorandum 263, in which he was planning to pull out of Vietnam. He had already pissed off the CIA and the Joint Chiefs and Big Oil and Big Steel, and that was the final straw.
But
he had to wait till after the election because he knew Goldwater and your dad would have called him soft on communism.
So he had to win
the election first.
Okay.
He never got the chance.
You mean Goering's pal, my father,
right,
as you call him?
His poker buddy.
Goering's poker buddy.
And by pal,
Bill
he means
Miller.
Interrogated him as a Nuremberg prosecutor.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Okay. I wanted to get to that because I mean, obviously the book is 63 Reasons to Believe There Was a Conspiracy to Assassinate JFK. But he says the book proves the U.S. government was behind the plot. But I've sort of never got asked the major like why.
Telling you because first of all, the CIA really screwed him at the Bay of Pigs. I mean, he had to take the fall for that. But it was the Bay of Pigs was never intended to be the actual event because the U.S. Navy was waiting just on the other side of the horizon. And he was informed after the fact that that we were going to have a Pearl Harbor-style attack on Cuba. And he said, no way, because that would definitely start World War III. So that was his run-in with the CIA. And then with Big Steel and Big Oil and all the people who ended up profiting by the Vietnam War, his trying to back out of it would have...
Interesting. Remember the day Orly Tates was in here? Same thing, head to head.
Remember? They bonded.
All the whole way down in the elevator as well. I was like, oh boy. In the parking garage, I left. They're still, you know.
Let me finish.
My best friend Wanda is coming to Thanksgiving, as are you at my house, and that's going to be, right? You guys are always. And you don't want to interrupt.
Yeah.
Jim, do you need another drink? Okay, never mind. All right. Hey, speaking of the CIA, Angela Merkel.
She's not happy.
Not happy.
Nine. Just say nine to the
CER.
I wouldn't be happy either.
President Obama received what sounds like an awkward phone call, not as awkward as an unwanted back rub. from German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who reportedly was upset by rumors that the NSA has monitored her personal cell phone. That'd be funny.
More than rumors, I think.
And also the president of Brazil. She's had her cell phone hacked by the NSA.
Jay Carney yesterday.
I can tell you that the president assured the chancellor that the United States is not monitoring and will not monitor the communications of the chancellor.
Yeah, but has.
He said, I want to assure you, Angela, I'm not. And then probably someone went, that's right. Wait, who was that?
Did you hear Carney's careful words?
Uh-huh.
I want to assure...
There is none, and there will be none.
Right, there is none, and there will be none.
But there has been.
It depends on what the definition of is.
Is.
What? That, okay, that was Clinton-esque.
However, this from the Telegraph, France should remember its own history before complaining too much about American
espionage. Well, there's the whole Vichy kind of thing that happened.
Europe abuzz with allegations that the U.S. is spying on its allies. In 1991, the former head of France's Foreign Intelligence Service admitted that France had spied on U.S. technology companies that competed with French rivals. Yeah, J'accuse.
Oh, well, that's industrial espionage.
It was noted that
different.
France has long been among the most aggressive users of espionage to collect foreign industrial and technological secrets, perhaps second only to Japan. This included allegations of bugged seats on Air France.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Zut alors.
Right. In 1992, another former CIA director noted that the French are the most predatory service in the world, and that the old Soviet Union, now that the old Soviet Union is gone, they conclude François Hollande might do well to remember the history before shouting too loudly about the NSA.
It still didn't make it right.
Shocked to find out there's spying going on with countries. This is brand new information.
Yeah, but allies?
Yeah.
All right, I've been warned not to say Santorum will help the cooch come from behind.
So you won't say that?
No, I will not.
I will not have said that.
No, I will not. Frothy Santorum is reportedly going to lead a strike force, as we mentioned, to help save the flailing and failing Republican candidate for governor of Virginia, Ken Cuccinelli, who is 2 weeks away from losing very, very badly to Terry McAuliffe. Oh, I hope Wolf Blitzer gets caught unawares again. That must have been my favorite moment of the primary.
I don't know if I can leave it there.
The Santorum surge has led to a spurt in fundraising.
Oh, boy. What can Brown do for you?
I'm being told in my ear I should spend more time with the Mr. Google. Okay. All right, Orrin Hatch. Senator Orrin Hatch has some strong words for his Tea Party colleagues.
Yep.
Suggesting members need to be rehabilitated after their recent actions. This is going to be fun, this whole civil war in the Republican Party. He was asked about Senator Mike Lee, fellow Republican of Utah, who I think he's disappointed in him. He stopped short of endorsing a second term for the Tea Party freshman, instead saying Lee has time to show he's worthy of being reelected. Oh, snap. He said the tactics were not the right tactics. It takes experience sometimes to make sure you can use the right tactics. And meanwhile, oh, no, the poo's hitting Mike Lee's fan back home in Utah. He beat Robert Bennett here in 2010. It was the Tea Party's first big triumph.
Mm-hmm.
This from the Washington Post. Now, after the 16-day government shutdown, it's Lee who faces a revolt within his own party. Oh, dear. Lee's approval ratings in Utah have cratered.
Is he going to get teabagged
from the
right?
Oh, by the way, the federal government, the biggest employer in Utah, by the way.
Yeah.
Lee and prominent Republicans and local business executives are openly discussing the possibility of mounting a primary challenge against him. Top Republicans also maneuvering to redesign the party's nomination system in a way that would make it more difficult for Lee to win re-election in 2016. No, this is that he's getting mainstream Republicans.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'm not sure you can get any teabaggier than him.
You know what? The Tea Party has never failed to surprise
me. That's true. There might be someone back here.
I mean, if they're teabagging Mitch McConnell, who's pretty damn far right, then I...
By the way, if you hate being called teabaggers, stop wearing that stupid hat with the bags hanging
exactly.
in your face.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. A new survey conducted during the shutdown found 57, that's almost 60%, Jim, of Utahans...
There's a lot of vowels in there.
Utahans.
Utahanians?
Wanted Lee to be more willing to compromise. The senator's approval rating dropped to 40%, down from 50% in June, with 51% disapproving. Lee waved off the findings. As you do, he said, the only number I worry about is how many people are being hurt by Obamacare. Okay. He said, I understand that people in Utah and people in America, for that matter, don't like fighting in Washington, but if we don't have these fights, nothing changes. Hmm. Yeah, well, you had the fight, and nothing changed, except your approval ratings and everybody else's went in the toilet, in the turlet.
Yep.
In other Civil War news, the GOP rhino hunting season begins in earnest.
Yay!
From the Daily Beast. Forget defending their House majority. Some Republicans who angered the Tea Party during the shutdown must fight back. Primary challenges. Even Boehner isn't immune. Oh, no. More trouble for Boehner.
Uh-oh.
Zoinks.
The new spate of primaries mostly target those Republicans who failed to toe the Tea Party line during the recent budget standoff. In North Carolina, for instance, Taylor Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
A former aide to President George W. Bush announced his bid to run against Representative Walter Jones,
mm-hmm.
North Carolina.
And you are, and I would know you from.
Jones voted the conservative line on the most recent rounds of fiscal negotiations, but that wasn't enough for Griffin, who said the votes were largely symbolic. What now?
What?
So even if you vote the way they want, it's you didn't vote the right way. You didn't do this with your hands.
Right.
When you voted.
Doesn't make sense.
Griffin said, I think people are angry, and I think the anger is being channeled by Obamacare, which is, by all accounts, a disaster. Well, by all accounts on Fox News.
Yeah.
By all Rush Limbaugh's accounts. What do you mean? This is just, you know what would give this credibility? If they hadn't already been saying it long before Obamacare launched. This is a failure. This is a huge, it's a disaster, debacle of epic. It hasn't started. Oh, all right. Well, it's going to be.
Just you wait.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make sure it's debacle-y.
Right. Which is why they need to try to fix the voting in state by state. This belongs in the Isn't It Ironic file. Texas judge nearly blocked from voting because of state's new voter ID laws.
Isn't it ironic? That is actually ironic.
Yeah, right?
Black flying a Chardonnay? Not really.
No.
Kind of gross.
Just unfortunate. Just icky. We bet the Republicans in the Texas state legislature passed their voter ID law. The last person they were trying to keep from voting would be District Court Judge Sandra Watts, but that's exactly what almost happened. Watts has been voting in Texas for 49 years without a single problem. Ran into issues Tuesday night when she showed up at her polling place to cast her early ballot for November special election. You know what she hit a snag? Because her driver's license lists her maiden name.
Oh. Uh-huh.
As her middle name, and her voter registration form uses her actual middle name. She was floored, she said, when the ID I've used for voter registration and identification for the last 52 years was not sufficient yesterday.
Wow.
She went on to say she was concerned about other women not knowing about this change and being disenfranchised because of it. Which, by the way, she said, I was married in 1964, and that was the law when you were mandated. You had to use your maiden name on your driver's license.
Right.
I remember seeing my mom's.
Huh.
Yes.
It's
so new way to get chicks not to vote.
Right.
Hmm.
Exactly.
Wow, that's handy.
Just kind of stealth repeal the 1920s.
I think my mom had her maiden name.
Yeah?
Her.
What was your mom's maiden name?
Davis.
The NSA already told me that. Okay. 17 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
There's a tea party in her pants, and you're invited. Call now, 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller.
Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 22 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. By the way, I love this story. For those of all y'all that fly a lot.
Okay.
Don't you love watching someone trying to get a bag in the overhead? It's clearly not going in the overhead, and they just get madder and madder.
Bam, bam,
bam. Everyone lets in unison shout, it's not going to fit! A woman booted from plane after bag drama. Out of Atlanta.
Okay.
A woman upset she couldn't fit her bag in the overhead bin was removed from the plane after throwing a tantrum and threatening a flight attendant.
Oh, God.
In video captured by a passenger. See, you can't act like a douche anywhere anymore because everyone has a cell phone
That's
camera.
Right.
The woman is seen screaming and cursing on the Frontier flight from Denver to Atlanta. At one point, she notices she's being recorded by a man with a cell phone, so she grabs the man's phone and throws it to the back of the plane.
Oh. Okay.
After refusing to leave the plane on her own, she's eventually escorted off.
Yeah. I'm not putting that Turnbull.
Yeah, that's going to be you one of these
days.
Just,
they can defeat the laws of physics. No, if I get the wrong angle, I can do it. How many times have you seen the flight attendant? Ma'am, sir, that's not going to...
And meanwhile, they're taking all the space in the aisle, so everybody waiting behind them is just glaring at them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So no
Why do I always think
seat.
Guys I see doing it are probably really bad at sex? No, it does. It's going to fit. It's going to go. Just this, and I have the right egg. Ow! Stop it. It's not going to fit. Sue in Rockville, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Sue. Hello, Sue.
Hello, sweetie. I'm so glad I'm taking the train up to New York City and not a plane this weekend.
There you go.
Now, listen, I understand that you have 3 hours to fill and you have to let a certain number of fidiots on the radio.
Right.
You know, but...
It's mandated by the FCC.
Yes.
Yes, seriously. But what I don't understand is why anyone would believe anything any Republican would say ever. The... F-35 jet is still being developed at the cost of already $400 billion, and it cannot fly in the rain.
I think it was the F-22 that couldn't fly.
Well, no, it's F-35 also. Well, look it up, because I just said $400 billion ongoing. Even McCain said it's one of the greatest national scandals we've ever had, and yet how many Republican hearings have we had on it? You don't need to put up any fingers. And, you know, as well as the $24 billion the economy just suffered a hit thanks to the Republicans. There's nothing they can say that gives them credence about the whole, problems with the website. Nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's all there is to it.
Yes, and I, as I mentioned, the GOP.com, one of the biggest debacles in the history of websites.
Well, we should have canceled the GOP in 2009. We would have
we should have.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Thanks, honey.
Another thing about the F-35 is that it's trying to do too many things. It's a jack of all trades and master of none.
Oh, my God. We've had JFK talk and plane talk.
Yeah. Also, the canopy is flush with the rest of the fuselage, so you can't see behind you, which is suicide for a fighter pilot. So.
Why would you need to see behind you? That's in the past. Move on. By the way, Russ writes of the asshat pulmonologist caller.
Yep.
How terrible of a pulmonologist, nurse, respiratory therapist do you have to be to only earn $50,000 a year?
Yeah,
where does he
wait
work?
A minute.
Yeah, if you're a specialty nurse like that, 50, really?
That doesn't sound
right.
Yeah,
you make more than that.
No, he's a pulmonologist the way I'm a pulmonologist, and that I read Bill Pullman's IMDb page.
I learned more about Bill Pullman this morning than I've ever expected.
Hey, he was very funny in Ruthless People.
Yes.
I don't think I ever saw that one.
You never saw Ruthless People?
No, I don't think I did. Oh,
okay, that's one of the funniest movies ever made.
Well,
you
have
to see that.
Okay, then.
All right.
And
then.
Helen Slater's in it, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Damn.
What is happening this morning? Okay. I'm just looking up on the TV. Obviously, this is... I swear to God, like when this gets to be a one-a-day, so a well-liked teacher, another one, found slain in the woods yesterday behind the Danvers, Massachusetts High School. 14-year-old boy who was found walking along the state highway overnight was charged with killing her.
Yeah.
And the story out of Sparks, Nevada just kills me. We mentioned this yesterday. But that says everything you need to know about what kind of country we're living in today. He survived 3 tours in Afghanistan and was shot by a 12-year-old.
Wow.
I mean, in his classroom.
Middle school.
Yeah.
Right.
Mike Lansbury survived war. He was killed in class. The Nevada teacher killed protecting his students Monday was a veteran who served in Afghanistan, deployed 3 times, most recently to Afghanistan. He really is a hero. I mean, he told the students in his class to run away and get someplace safe. They're saying he basically acted heroically and bought time for others to hide. And he walked toward the sound of the gunfire and he tried to get the kid. He said, please put the gun down and shot him. 12 years old.
So he was safer in Afghanistan.
Right. He survived the Taliban and Al-Qaeda.
I think he was saying to the kid, hand me the gun, hand me the gun, hand me the gun, and the kid shot him.
Yeah.
Oh.
Hey, just exercising his Second Amendment rights.
Yeah.
What are you, a gun grabber or something?
Hey, speaking of violence, you know we haven't heard from in a while.
Who?
Sheldon Adelson.
Hello, Sheldon. Yes, I did get lots of swirlies in high school, because my name is Sheldon.
He says Obama should nuke Iran.
Oh, well, thanks for being helpful.
That's
just so you know, largest donor to the Republican Party and its affiliated groups. He was Nudie's a sugar daddy, wasn't he?
Yep. Yes. And he owns the Venetian and the Palazzo casinos in
Vegas.
He's
a casino billionaire.
Yep.
How many innocent people would you murder to...
That's not important now. He said the only proper negotiating tactic with Iran would be to fire a nuclear missile at the country and threaten to wipe out the entire population of Tehran, the nation's capital.
That's not
Which
helpful.
Which make you a bigger mass murderer than Hitler.
Yes.
Right. Except that your name would be...
Sheldon! Hello, I'm Sheldon Hitler. Nice to meet you.
Okay, 29 minutes after the hour. Right back with comedian Dean Obadala next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
You know, a lot of these young Hollywood girls carry their little dogs around in their purse, but...
Stephanie Miller.
Carries one in her pants.
One of your dogs in your pants?
That's going to be big pants for my dogs.
Big clown pants.
34 minutes after the hour. Yep, it's my favorite thing when I'm hiking. How many times do you think I've heard that? Big.
Hey, that's big dog. Hey, have a saddle for it.
Polar bear. Looks like a polar bear. What kind of dog is it?
It's big bear.
What kind? What kind now? Great Pyrenees. Grass hat. What is that? Where do you get that? Polar bear. Okay.
It's got a great pair of knees. I didn't know dogs had knees.
Okay, everybody get their big dog jokes out of their system before you go hiking. Thank you. All right, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Boy, have we've been caught in the war on comedy before. Our good friend Dean Obadala has a great new piece called The Tea Party's War on Comedy. Here he is, combatant Dean Obadala. Good morning, sir.
Hi, how are you? What was going on? You guys were just screaming and yelling.
I know.
What was that?
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I enjoyed it, but I wasn't sure what was going on. I was a little worried.
It's the repeated questions I get about my big dogs every single day of my life when I walk them. Yes. When people state the obvious or they think it's a joke you've never heard.
That's a big dog. Do you have a saddle for that thing?
I see.
Saddle. Okay. All right. Dean, what are you up to now, you scamp? You've gone and done it again.
Angered people.
You tweeted a joke.
I tweeted a joke that I give about 9 seconds of thought to. As like everyone else, you tweeted a bunch of jokes about things. I tweeted some jokes about
Cruise. It did not start the whole world laughing.
I tweeted a joke.
The whole Tea Party screaming is what it did.
I didn't
know. Right, because you insulted their god, Ted Cruz, right?
They're Jesus Christ, and I use that tweet, and they even got mad about that. I go, he's your Jesus Christ, I get it. And they go, that's sacrilegious. I'm like, I didn't. You know, say anything other than I think he's like your Jesus now because they love him. And should I say what the tweet was?
Well, yes, go ahead. What was the original tweet that caused
if anybody
the Armageddon?
Is in the Tea Party and listening, please turn off the radio now. I know you monitor the show.
Right.
This will make your heart, you'll get angrier than you are if that's even possible. I don't know if that's possible, but this could make you really mad. So here was the tweet because I tweeted it Sunday when John McCain was on TV talking about Ted Cruz again. And I said, anyone else hoping Ted Cruz and John McCain settle their feud in an Aaron Burr, Alexander Hamilton style duel, I'd be rooting for John McCain.
Oh, my God.
Big deal.
Oh
that's a tweet.
Oh
it's humorous or it's not.
It's a joke.
It's funny or not. It's your choice. I don't really care. I tweet out 10 jokes a day. 20. I don't really care about them.
It's a joke about a duel from 1804.
Bingo. Somebody. The horror. The sky is falling. Protect your families. Lock the doors. There are people out there who are going to duel with antique pistols. What is going to happen? But people went... insane. Should I say the response, or do you want to tell them?
Yeah, no,
happened?
You can go ahead. But this happens to me almost every day at Newsbusters. Like they assume you mean literally. Like when I said they are politically being suicide bombers during the shutdown, and of course the headline was Stephanie Miller says Republicans want to blow up your children. I'm like,
which was the subtext.
Yes. So they think you literally think.
Like that. How dare they?
You really literally think Ted Cruz and John McCain are going to get pistols?
The concept of a metaphor is just completely lost on them.
It's clearly over the top hyperbole, right? And I'm a comedian. I am really a comedian. This is what I do. Every joke isn't funny. I haven't tried it out. I just tweeted out. The response to this 139 character tweet within hours was five different articles in four right-wing publications and a conservative guy from Mediate attacking the tweet, as if in Newsbusters, two in the Examiner, because I guess they don't cross-reference each other.
No.
One in a thing called Red Alert Politics, which I never heard of, no. And I think the red means they're communist.
Of course.
Right, and they don't like that either. But
the Examiner,
five articles going at me saying, and they always give the opposite, like, well, what if you told a joke about that, about a Democrat, what would happen? I don't care. Tell a joke about a Democrat. I don't really care. As long as it's not racist or homophobic or anti-Semitic or something like, or sexist, we got to let political jokes go, my friends. We just got to let them go. What are we doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, and you said the Examiner accused you of fantasizing about a duel.
The headline said I was fantasizing about a duel, and I'll be honest, I have fantasized. I don't want to get into it. But my fantasies have never included John McCain nor Ted Cruz.
Yes.
And I hope they never will. But you never know. I mean, I could be a weird day, and they could be in it. I don't want to get into this right now. Don't judge me.
As you say, don't drag comedians into your grotesque reindeer games. Comedians should be afforded great latitude in telling jokes about people in power. I mean, and I do think that's the difference. I mean, nobody told more wiener jokes than you and I.
Sure.
You know,
and Bill Clinton jokes, right? The sex scandals going on.
Oh, my God.
I told tons. I didn't have anyone on the right upset with me there. It's really, you know, the Newsbusters guy, this guy Noel Shepard, who's not a bad guy. We tweet back and forth, and sometimes they're a little, you know, we go at each other a little bit, but it's always respectful and fine. He said to me the most honest thing in his article. He said, I said, now is the Tea Party trying to shut down comedy? Which, of course, Tea Party shutting down government. And he said, no. But since we live in a world where any conservative criticism of President Obama is deemed racist, we on the right are just tired of liberals being able to say anything they want with total impunity. And that's where it became serious. That's where you see a little insight into what's going on, why five articles would come out. They are tired of every time they attack Obama, even
right.
with jokes.
Except that that premise is completely false because... You know, nobody I've heard calls it racist unless it's inherently racist what they're saying.
Well, I was going to ask the guy, what example? You're talking about, like, pictures of a monkey and being Obama, like that,
yes.
that kind of stuff?
Yes.
And you know, they'll go, well, you know, it's just comedy. You know, and Rush Limbaugh is not a comedian. I get people on the right going, but Rush is a comedian. You were upset when he said stuff about Sandra Fluke. He is not a comedian. He is a right-wing guy and says crappy stuff and then tries to hide as a comedian. If you're, you know, it's... But I would still give leeway if you're talking about a political figure. If he was doing a mean joke about a senator or an elected official, Rush Limbaugh in this case, I'd be fine with it. You know, Sandra Fluke was a whole different story. We're not talking about that situation. Ted Cruz is a very powerful man. And clearly I'm not advocating violence. And even if it wasn't a comedian, that thing is not advocating violence. I'm referencing a duel. I think some of them were angry on the right. They had a Google Aaron Burr. And
exactly.
Hamilton. Now you're making us read.
How dare you make me use this computer for anything other than porn? How dare you?
You give some good advice. You said next time you hear a political joke, don't analyze it. You're like you're a lab technician on CSI. How about you either laugh or you don't laugh? Your choice, of course.
That's it.
Yeah.
You will enjoy life more. Here's the thing. I'm a comedian. Everything I tweet is not going to be funny. And every joke I tell in my act, even ones that have been proven to work, some people just don't find funny. It's comedy. It's subjective. I get it. People say to me, you're not funny. I go, fine. I don't care. That's your choice.
Right.
It's subjective. But don't do this faux instant outrage. Like, because it's not about the joke. And that was the point of the Newsbusters guy. And I really salute him for being honest. It's about the right being angry that every time they would attack Obama, they had such harsh pushback. And now... They're putting us on notice, and me as a comedian on notice, that if I attack Ted Cruz or maybe Rand Paul, they're going to come at us hard. And it's not no exceptions for comedians either now. This is it. They are angry.
Yeah. Did you hear our favorite news in comedy this week is Fox fired, air quote, comedian Steven Crowder. And then they released he attacked Sean Hannity since he's been fired, and so Fox had to release a statement saying he was never that funny anyway.
Oh my God!
Trust me, you didn't need to tell me.
Yeah.
For 4 years, you've been claiming he was funny, but.
Well, you know, I read about a little bit about that, and you know, political comedy can be tough because I think even people on the far left, and I was honest in my article, and on the far right have something in common. If they don't agree with the point of your joke, a political point of your joke, they won't laugh at it even if it's funny. And I've seen that time and time again. I don't find people on the far left sending me angry emails or tweets about it. Every now and then you get it. I get things from the left going, I was disappointed with that. And then you're like, you feel worse. Like, oh, okay, I let you down. You know, because they're much...
Well, you make the point that sometimes the far left and the far right have one thing in common. They can lack a sense of humor.
They can if they don't agree with the point you're making in your joke. You know, like if you're going to do a rape joke, you're going to open up yourself to criticism from the left and the right, and usually it's from the left, frankly. But I've told jokes about race and been attacked by newsbusters. Anything I talk about that's not like, unless you're Carrot Top, if you have an opinion on any political thing, these guys on the right are monitoring comedians. Now, they really are, and they're monitoring you. Of course, you know this. But it's a little, not alarming, but eye-opening to me that, and I've seen this more
Listen,
and more.
I've experienced it. What's the thing we always say, Chris? We always say that theoretically we have come up with a show that appeals to no one because we're too liberal for conservatives and too politically incorrect for liberals. So
that's your show.
So we
get you're on air.
We get stick up the butt liberals that complain, to which we say,
"Good Lord,
yes,
the rod up that man's butt must have a rod up its butt."
Well, the best is, I don't know about you, when I get angry emails from conservatives, they're like, "You're an idiot, a jerk." When I get
and a name caller,
it's like three pages long about the history of the Constitution and
about
sexism. It's much more well informed, but it's so hard. Just call me a jerk. I'd rather just be done like that. I like the conservatives for that part. Like, "You're an idiot. I hate you." I'm like, "Okay, fine. Next." You know, liberals are much more thoughtful in their criticism. It's much more painful too.
I get a lot of "You're so hateful, you C word." So you know, it's
really cowgirl. I get the M word being a Muslim, so that just gives life. They have everything. Then, like, I saw Ann Coulter in the makeup room last week. It was going on HLN, the Hollering Loudly Network.
Yeah.
We go on.
The who?
The Hollering Loudly Network.
Yes.
The Hollering Loudly Network, where everyone just yells for no reason. And Ann Coulter was in the makeup room, and I wanted to go up to her and see, did she hate me more for being Muslim, Palestinian, or liberal? Like, which would be, and I took a picture and tweeted it. And you know the weird thing? She was nice to everyone in the makeup room. I'm like, don't be nice now. Don't be nice to everyone. Be the evil person you are.
More importantly, what does she look like before makeup?
I learned long ago that it's all an act. When she's in front of a camera, it's all an act.
That was the worst thing to realize. Yeah. I saw that because I'm like, oh, my God. So you're smarter than all of this, and this is a game? And, all right, it's theater. I get it. But some of the stuff is so hateful. I mean,
I did not mean to imply that she doesn't look good before makeup. But how does she know it's time to go on?
She came in actually in her own casket, and they woke her from the casket. She got up, and they put a little makeup on, and like, go. It's like, all right.
I have only two boxes.
Dean Obadala, you are a national treasure, sir. I will talk to you soon.
The children of the night. Thanks for having me on again, guys. Great
All right, thank you. Dean Obadala.
Yeah, and The Muslims Are Coming is available on iTunes if you'd like to get it.
Yes, indeed you do. Mm-hmm. 45 minutes after the hour, Saucy Teachers. It's just a dream come true day for Jim. Talk about that next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
You want to get nuts? Come on! Let's get nuts.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 50 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. A world record has been set, Jim. A runner in a marathon has knitted the scarf. Yes, he finished a marathon in 5 hours, 48 minutes, and 27 seconds. And knitting experts measured the scarf he created at more than 12 feet long.
Why?
I don't know.
Just because.
It's the scarf knitting while running a marathon record was previously
That's
held
a record?
By Susie Heuer.
Someone else has done this.
Right. I don't.
Why?
But slightly slower.
Is there like a bicycling with scissors competition as well? Just random activities?
It's like the duathlon in the Olympics. You ski, then you shoot.
Yeah,
it's
that doesn't seem wise.
No. Okay. Who put those two things together?
Whoever came up with the running
two
and scissors.
Two great tastes that go great together.
Don't
running
great.
And knitting.
Yeah. That's just skiing and shooting and swimming and.
Saucy Teachers edition.
Oh, hey now.
First one, students came to the defense of a 21-year-old Spanish teacher, muy caliente, in the Dallas area, who was fired for her modeling shoots with Playboy. Mm. You would have been the head of that student group, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Defending,
defending that teacher.
Muy caliente, Spanish teacher. I hate when this happens. University of Iowa TA accidentally emails her homemade porn to students. Oh, no.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Damn. Oh, that's going to be bad.
Oh, could you please delete that and not send it on to
I
you?
Love that.
Sure,
has,
we'll get right on
that. She
asked
her students to kindly delete it and avoid sharing it with others.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. We did. Oh, yeah, I heard it. Delete. Can you hear me?
Yeah, that was the delete button.
She emailed her students a file attachment filled with her own homemade porn instead of solutions to homework assignment.
Okie dokie.
All
right.
Okay.
Go to head of the class.
Excuse me?
What? Sorry. Right. Come again?
I'm not implying that all men are pigs, but this guy is.
What?
Somebody sent me this. Cindy said, Steph, this douchebag, Matt Forney.
I've heard that name.
I need some douchebag music. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. Needs a massive Stephanie Miller Show smackdown. He has written a piece entitled The Case Against Female Self-Esteem.
What?
He writes, he sounds like a peach. I'm just going to come out and say it. I love insecure women. Whenever a girl I'm talking to brags about how she's confident and strong, I can feel my deflating like a punctured tire. I'd still bang her, of course. A repellent personality doesn't negate the fact that she has a slamming body. But a crucial part of the attraction is lost. I'd be less offended if she ripped a fart in my face.
Well,
the idea that women...
You're his dream girl, I guess.
I'm insecure and I love fart jokes. The idea that women should have self-esteem or need it beyond a low baseline to ensure they don't commit suicide or become psycho-stalkers is one of the most disastrous social engineering experiments of the modern era. A woman with excessive confidence is like a man with a vagina. It's an attribute that is at best superfluous and at worst prevents a woman from fulfilling their natural biological and social functions.
As being a doormat, in other words. No.
Yes.
Right.
In order for America to right itself, there needs to be a massive and concerted war on self-esteem. Why do I smell teabagger here?
Or maybe it's an elaborate hoax.
Insecurity is integral to femininity, he writes. Writes Matt. I was thinking about a couple of my past relationships. Ah! Surprising that he's not in one now. What could have gone wrong, I wonder? When I had this epiphany, the girls I've loved the most were the ones who were the most insecure, the most emotionally vulnerable. When I first went on a date with the only girl I would have ever married, her hands were trembling in nervousness. Yeah, probably because you're a douche. Insecurity is the natural state of a woman. How could it be anything else? Given her lack of physical strength, a woman on her own should be frightened as hell without men to protect her.
Oh my God.
A piece of work. Confident doesn't give men erections. Vulnerability does.
This has got to be a parody.
No,
it's
not.
This can't be. Seriously?
No, it's not. Oh, no. I'm not reading the whole thing. It's very long.
It's not Andy Borowitz, is it?
No.
Okay.
You need to be willing to open yourself up, to give yourself over to their judgment, to risk being hurt and rejected. Let's see. So-called confident women are as threatening as a pile of dog turds. Sure, you can scrape them off your boots when you get home, but it's better not to step in the dog to begin with.
It's got to be a joke.
It is not. I'm telling you, it's not. Women are crying out for a man who will wound their self-esteem. Quote-unquote, confident women are still women, and they still lust after men who dominate them. Girls will all but die without masculine attention. Hell, I'm even starting to think that the feminist agita about rape culture is part of this as well.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he's one of the rapey, probably Republican guys.
He's a rapey Republican.
Yeah, pushing lies like the claim that 1 in 3 women will be raped during her lifetime, and they're constantly expanding the definition of rape, are ways for feminists to indulge their desire for vulnerability in a way that doesn't conflict with their view of themselves as strong and empowered. Oh, goodness. At the end of the day, there are no strong, independent women trademark. There are only shrews pleading for a taming. All the posturing, the pill-popping, the whining, and the demands for equality, they're a cry for help.
I know what it is. I think he's a masochist, and he really wants to have a girl beat the crap out of him.
Maybe.
I think that's...
I'll
get his way.
Some guys are into chick fights.
Girls don't want the six-figure cubicle job, the shiny Brooklyn two-bedroom, the master's degree, the sexual liberation, none of it. They want to be collectively led back to the kitchen, told to make a nice big tuna sandwich with extra mayo and lettuce, then swatted on the ass as we walk out the door. I say we give them what they want. Yeah. Oh, Matt, I can't believe you're still single!
Yo, bitch, go make me a turkey sandwich.
Not enough mayo!
Wow.
That's breathtaking.
He needs to move to Saudi Arabia, where this cleric
just
said women should not drive because it hurts their ovaries.
What?
You know, being in the sitting position.
Right.
Like
he
that.
Said women who drive suffer from having their pelvis forced upward, so that's why. He's just trying. He's also a gynecologist.
Oh, well, that helps.
Yes, he says scientific studies have proven that driving has adverse effect on women's reproductive health. Hmm. That's why you need to stay in the kitchen making a tuna sandwich. Matt! Oh, all right.
Get in there with a slap on the ass and make me a tuna sandwich.
Well, I like that part, you know.
Oh, that's right, you do.
Like Spanky. Okay.
I keep forgetting that.
You're in S&M.
That's it, not from him. That's it for us. We'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.